And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 217. Today is a seven questions episode. My guest, comedian Emmett Montgomery. Emmett had joined me for, as many of you know, have been listening to the show for a while. Yet there hasn't been a lot of episodes have not dropped recently. I've had a focus on the podcast, You're Watching a Movie with Silas Sunstein. A lot of my reviews are ending up over there. And that's where I've been talking about movies and doing film club and such. And honestly, until I hadn't realized I hadn't dropped a seven questions episode here in a while. And I apologize to the fans that have been waiting for new episodes and such. So here you go. Today, Emmett Montgomery. Emmett is a comedian, Seattle based. He performs at the Joke Tellers Union, produces it every second and fourth Wednesday at the Clockout Lounge here in Seattle. He just headlined the Comedy Bar in Capitol Hill. He headlines all over places. He was named by the Seattle Weekly as one of Seattle's funniest thing, the funniest things in Seattle, let alone people. So you need him. He's very bookable for shows and classes and other weirdness, and you need to get him in your life. So check out the other podcasts. We do a film club. We talked about the movie Booksmart together, so you can listen to that. And while he was there, I said, hey, I want to do a seven questions episode with you. And so he jumped on. We did seven questions, and there you go. There he is. Here he is now. So yeah, lots been going on. I've been I'm sorry. I think I'm gonna make some changes. I gotta get some more stuff out here. I need to be talking to you more regularly. And I've been saying this a while. I'm in the midst of a change in my podcast studio. I'm on the precipice of almost getting it there so that I can just sit down, record, and move on with my life and get it uploaded. So it's not a harrowing experience every time as it sometimes feels like it is. So we'll work on that. And I have so much to share with you all that has nothing to do with films, and this is my outlet for that. So let's keep it going, okay? So here it is. I want you to open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 217, Seven Questions with Emmett Montgomery. Well, Emmett, welcome to Film Club.
I'm glad we finally did this.
Yeah.
How long have you been doing this for?
Look, I could say for a year, but you know, then you would see the number of episodes and then it'd seem like, well, what have you been doing? There's been a lot going on. Like, you know what? Time is a construct, Emmett.
Oh, it's totally
created by the man to try to keep me down, and feel bad, right? It's like the, oh, do you even do comedy? Are you a comedian just because you perform once a year at the WrestleMania of comedy, Emerald City Comic Con? I don't know. I don't know. Am I a comedian? I don't know. I just know that I am a lover of life and movies and good conversation.
I think you're doing great. You found your way, and I think that's all we can really do is find our ways. And I'll tell you though, over the years, I have gotten that. Well, do you really do?
Are you
anyway? Are you still doing it? I don't know what happened.
You had such exuberance. I think the camera was like, this is too many pixels to take in at a time.
My iPad just reset, and I don't know why. It's still, something happened. Oh, there's great footage of Donna. Oh, sorry, Carmen.
I've done that before.
She's very tiny.
They won't put you on the couch, though.
My miniature dog.
Like a dog, but littler. Yeah, you were saying that happens to you. Has happened to you in the past.
To me, yeah. Like, especially, so, you know, when I did Last Comic Standing, I disappeared for a second, right?
Yeah.
To do stuff. And then I came back and I was at, you know, I don't know, some open mic hell. And I guess we'll like, well, we haven't seen you around, you know, so how do we, you know, which is like, yeah, you haven't seen me because I've been headlining clubs and
so I'm working.
Working on a secret TV project, you know, and people really kind of
I
mean, what is comedy? You're producing stuff. You're making something happen.
What I love the most is I haven't even heard of you in the 5 years I've been doing comedy. And I go, you know, of those 5 years, four of them have been this, I don't know, pandemic going on. So maybe I'm not out at Russian teapot and bacon bar performing at an open mic. You know, I think I'm gonna be a little more particular now about who I only do certain super spreaders right now. You know, I don't want to do just any super spreader. Like,
And it's really about, well, what is your comedy world, right?
Yeah.
You know, and recently there's this national controversy because one of the clubs booked some comics based on some old credits, and then
canceled
them because turns out that they you know had some alt-right following and some transphobic stuff and did all that, and you know, and they were like, well, we didn't know,
yeah,
because some of that stuff was, you know, the bookers had only been involved for 2 years, but
to be fair,
they didn't see that the world was much bigger, right?
Yeah.
And that's a big thing. A lot of times, who are you? And, you know, I get that too, because I'll go to an open mic or do a local showcase, and they'd be like, well, I've never seen before, you know, or seen you before, or people will, you know, although my name is still whispered, you know.
Whispers.
Comedy grandpas, you know, of the days of yore.
Yeah,
but still, you know, if all I do is the shows I produce and host The Moth, hundreds of people see me a month, and that is me at my lowest subsistence, right?
Yeah.
But you know, and then other times I get to out of, I assume it's pure nepotism, get to perform at the Comic-Con. Which I'm
super excited for. If my daughter gets to perform, how can I turn down Emmett, right?
Yeah.
If my daughter's going to do her second performance ever, the first one at ECC 4 years ago, and she's coming back again doing a stand up again. Gonna see, you know, I think it's I was talking to her about it. It's an interesting experiment to see how an audience will react with jokes from a 17-year-old, it will be, or she'll be a day shy of 17 versus a 12, 13-year-old. Like,
yeah,
are they gonna still, will she get the grace that, you know, a 12-year-old coming up to do stand up is doing, it gets automatically, right? Will she follow her script as well as she did the first time? It'll be interesting. Like, we're all on different comedy journeys, you know. What's funny is there's people, you know, people, somebody said something about, oh, this person's transphobic, right? There's a lot of the average audience person may not even know anything. Like, people have already forgotten about Kevin Hart getting kicked off the Oscars, right? Like, people forget. We have short attention spans. We move on. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's not. And it's, I, you know, it's hard to keep track. It's hard to keep track of everything. I heard somebody was saying, like, they had assumed that everybody in the world watched Louis when that was on. And comes to find out, no. It never hit a million viewers. Like, we in comedy insulate ourselves so much amongst what we watch or identify with that we're just, I think we assume people just devour the art of stand-up the way that we do. And while there are people that do that, we need to realize our Netflix queue is geared toward us. Like, my wife does not get, it's fascinating. Look at like Facebook suggestions, you know, videos and stuff. She doesn't get stand-up comedy ever suggested to her.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't click on it ever. Like the only time she watches it, if I send her a clip.
Yeah, Kate's Instagram feed is completely different than mine.
Yeah.
You know, and but honestly, she's a bigger comedy fan than I am. You know, because but yeah, it is it's just wild.
Emmett, have I haven't done the seven questions with you, have I?
No.
My world famous seven questions. Do you have a couple more minutes that I could?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. All right. These are the Silas Lindensteins world famous seven questions that I asked.
Okay.
Yes.
Here we go.
All right. Number one, what are you most nerdy about?
Ooh. Oh, that is hard. I mean, I'm going to say puppet stuff.
Whoa. Okay.
Because I make these paper bag puppets.
Yeah.
Which I realize now this year, because I did a puppet slam, is the fact that I do these puppets is a response to my neurodivergence, right?
Okay.
When we were assigned to do these paper bag puppets in kindergarten, I didn't have the motor skills or the communication skills to do them. And I wasn't in a school system that celebrated people's differences, right?
Yeah.
It's more about how I held the scissors than what I did with them. And now I've become really good at, but I think that being denied puppets, I have become really, really, you know, now I make them, but it's just not that. It's just, you know, Jim Henson and the Muppets and all of that and creature effect. Anything where you make something that's not supposed to talk,
right?
I enjoy. So like stop motion and all of that. And then that goes to, but, you know, stop motion, animation, puppet stuff, all of that stuff. What I like about it is when you take that out of the kids' realm where it lives and actually realize that, like, you know, puppetry, animation, all that stuff, it's a medium. It's not a genre, right? But it's a tool to tell some pretty amazing stories, but also me doing that. And so I think that, but to enjoy that stuff means I also do have to watch kids stuff if I want to see it really done well. And so I can talk about puppetry and cartoons. And so I think I'm kind of a secret nerd.
I like that. That was not what I was expecting, but
that was more personal. And then the other one, which is really close coming to that, is of course Christmas. I am a huge Christmas nerd. As somebody who does a cosmic horror Christmas show every year, you know, I have to pay a certain amount on weird Christmas of taxes on weird Christmas every year.
Yeah.
I started this subversive Christmas show 10 years ago. But because of that, you know, they say that you should be careful when fighting monsters that you don't turn into a monster.
Yeah.
I am a huge Christmas fan because I get it. And if you do it right, you can make your own tradition. So one of my favorite movies that I've seen in the last couple of years was Falling into Christmas starring Lindsay Lohan, which I will unapologetically just love. And it's so easy. It's like an overboard without the danger.
Right.
And it's just because it's nice to see her having a good time and it's just easy to consume.
Right.
And I get really into it. I read books about Christmas. I'm halfway through a book called Last of the Wild Men, which is a talk about how Santa's roots are actually a primal prehistoric European fertility god that a Western civilization has broken up into parts, one being Santa, one being Satan. I'll read that, or you know, I'll get really into, there's a place called Christmas Land in the Midwest. It's a year-round Christmas amusement park that I want to visit. You know, I have thought about how, you know, my dream ideal retirement situation would be to have a year-round Christmas store with a healthy Krampus section and also have Hanukkah supplies, because you wouldn't believe how hard it is to get that stuff.
No, I adore this. This is wonderful. Okay. All right. Now, number two. Okay. What's something that you love to eat?
Well, you know, I was a pizza professional.
Uh-huh.
I worked for Pagliacci Pizza, which has won awards.
Yeah.
Our gourmet pizza thing here. I was their catering coordinator. I worked above the commissary, you know, where they made the dough, and okay, I got to have all the test pieces. So I have a lot of really strong feelings about pizza. In fact, you know, right now my show, Joke Tellers Union, is attached to Clock Out Lounge, which is a Stevie's Famous in it, which is considered one of the best pizza places right now. I have a lot of strong feelings about pizza, and I eat a lot of pizza. Some would argue so much. I love garbage pizza. But, you know, to say, what do you like to eat? Ah, pizza. I also, though,
it's not like to eat. It's love to eat, and you do sound like you love it.
Well, and I also have a lot of strong feelings about it.
Yeah, too. That's love.
From, like, a professional perspective. Uh-huh. And I met my wife at the call center of that pizza place. So we have some strong feelings. My friend Mara actually sent me a spreadsheet of, who also used to work at Pagliacci, of every pizza that she has eaten in the last year with, like, a grain on it. And we're talking about maybe doing some sort of pizza-based review site.
Yep.
But,
like Pizza Mojo, I want to try that. I hear a lot of stuff about it.
The Long Island style pizza place that you have, Rhode Island.
It's now open enough. You can actually just walk in and order something now. So, they figured it out or something.
Okay. Yeah, I will say though, pho is very special to me. When I moved here, pho was on every street corner. And I love it. I love a good pho. It's harder to find, like, a cheap, honest bowl of pho in Seattle.
Cheap,
now.
Honest bowl of pho.
But for me, pho was kind of my first or second date thing to go. Because if you're vegetarian or you're vegan, there's options to it. Also, if you're going to kiss this face, you should see it eat soup.
Yeah.
And that is a really good way to move that. So as far as, and that's one of my go-to things. I also like how it's like,
Relationship continues, you need to see me eat soup, basically.
Yeah. Because, you know,
it could change some things.
And it has, you know? And then
that's fantastic.
Okay.
All right. Number three, what's something you like to drink?
Well, you know, that has changed. You've known me for a while.
Yeah.
And you know that 9 years ago, I would have said something else, you know.
Yeah.
What I like to drink was vodka, you know, particularly a Bloody Mary. I love, because it's kind of like a boozy breakfast, right?
Yeah.
I was a huge fan of that. And, you know, still, now that I've been sober for, you know, almost a decade, I will say, it's almost like, what do I like, or what do I get to drink?
What do you love? What do you love? I should have said love.
What do I love to drink?
Yeah.
Well, I'm a huge coffee fan. As a kid who grew up Mormon, I like to drink it without anything. I'd like to drink it plain, you know. because I need to feel all the taboo. I need to taste it. You know, I don't want to dilute any of the adventure there. I do love a live above a great bakery that serves coffee, but it's not like I'm not seeking it out for the flavor. I'm seeking it out for the drugs in it, because it's the one vice I have. I do still, you know, I'm probably a bigger V8 enthusiast than most people. It makes me think of my dad.
Should have had a V8. Should have had a V8.
I'm kind of, it's sad that I'm seeing the spicy V8 is harder to get now. Big fan of spicy V8, V8 sexier cousin.
I can't even remember the last time I saw a V8 around. So
you can get a flat of it at Costco.
I'm guessing it's one of those things, if I'm not looking for it, it doesn't, like, I forget it exists. But Nutella.
Available.
Yeah.
It's not your cheap option anymore, all of it. And we put, we actually have a great, Kate has a great crock pot roast recipe where she doesn't use the water in the roast. She substitutes the water for spicy V8, and oh my goodness, it's fantastic.
Okay. I can respect that.
We call it meat cup. You know, what I like to drink. If you want to, I'm gonna go back to what I love to drink.
Yeah.
And I could say thank God for seltzers that they're here.
Yeah.
I'm glad that the seltzer renaissance happened when I was trying to get sober, because it gave me something more grown up. And I love, one of my shows is sponsored by Athletic. I love that NA beers are becoming a thing, and it's actually not just drinking wet cardboard or bread. There's actually some flavorful options.
Yeah.
So nice to have the opportunity to spend $7 on a can of bullshit. But you know what I really love to drink?
Yeah.
I'm going to go back. Soup.
Soup?
Huge soup enthusiast. I love a good pho broth. I love a good pho broth. I love that. I eat soup with a fork. With a fork, because I don't know, my dad used to do it. So soup with a fork, you get the chunky bits, and then you have this beautiful, your final moment is you get it just
I don't think you count that as a drink.
I also put my soup, I'll do a nice mug of soup. I'll put it in a coffee cup.
I don't know if you're sitting by the fire with a mug of soup, if that counts as drinking.
What is in this? We don't know. It could be made with bacon.
Could be soup. Okay. All right. Number four, what kind of music do you love?
So back in, remember when Lyft would ask you what your preference was for music?
Yeah.
So I put sad beard music.
Sad there. Beard music. Okay.
And which would be really fun because they would try to do it. Sometimes it would be,
what is sad beard music? Yeah. What genre is that?
I think the best example of sad beard music is, there is a great album by an alt country artist, Jeffrey Martin, called Dogs in the Daylight, which is beautiful. It's on Bandcamp. In fact, they just I'm going to order it on vinyl. And it's just, you know, I like that. Just the kind of just stuff that makes you feel things from, you know, wizards who felt. But you know what I really love? Like, one of my favorite things in the records that I buy, I'm a real big fan of film scores and soundtracks. I like that. So Mandy has one of my favorite soundtracks. Johan Johansson, it was his last album, he did. And I think it's just fantastic. I like stuff that I can put on and either lose myself in and just feel, or I can actually have it be, you know, kind of my soundtrack, my score of the creative stuff I'm doing. And I really do kind of listen to that. And some of my favorite movies are movies where the score or the sound is part of the environment or almost another character, right? And I think when I started recognizing the score is when I realized that I liked movies, you know? Mm. First example for that was the David Cronenberg movie Scanners, which uses Moog and electric stuff because it's all about telepathy. And so you have a lot of stuff. And I'm like, oh, they are actually building the environment. And it's more than just, this is the sad part. This is the scary part.
Yeah.
And I like that. And then just as far as though, I think one of my favorite artists is Charles Bradley, who his story, there's great biography about him.
Okay.
And he was a semi-homeless, illiterate James Brown impersonator. Living in Brooklyn, who people were like, hey, why don't you do your original music? And so he did and was able to find like a backing band and everything, taught himself to read because he was writing so many songs, he didn't want to forget them.
Yeah.
And had a pretty amazing brilliant.
Yeah.
Career. And so like the first season of Luke Cage, when they're in Copperheads Club and there is like a real like funky act going on, that's Charles Bradley in the jacket doing stuff. And they do some Charles Bradley score on that. For me, I mean, and Otis Redding, I've always been a big fan because of Pretty in Pink, actually. You know. Because my mom, who was married to a freeform radio DJ, before she was married to my dad, actually had a pretty great record collection. But for me, it's more about what is going to make me feel things. So,
there's about 5 years there that I pretty much only bought movie soundtracks because it had the best collections. Because I was like, I don't want to listen to one artist. I love listening to artists doing different songs all the time or different people doing. Yeah. I like to hear a myriad of genres together. It's like getting a playlist from somebody, right?
It's great. It's kind of a best of, and it's fantastic.
The original mixtape.
Yeah. It's great. I'm going to sound like a total hipster. But the way I consume music, I don't do Spotify. I don't do stuff like that. My preferred streaming service is Bandcamp. And I buy one or two albums every first Friday because that is when all of the proceeds go to that artist.
Oh.
And I'll do that. And sometimes I'll do stand-up. Sometimes it will be a local stand-up I know, a local band, or just some stuff that has fallen in my way.
Yeah.
And so, and then I'll put that on shuffle and it will get weird because it'll be like electronic stuff, and then it will be this sludge metal. And then it'll be sad country stuff. And then it'll be my friend Brandy Posey talking about taking a poop. And it will all just be a thing. And then I go to record stores, and I'm usually rating the Motown section or the soundtrack and scores. So, and then occasionally, like, just a really, you know, cool album will happen. And that's, music, which was such a big part of my life, but going to local shows, the weird secret punk shows in Utah and Salt Lake, you know, doing all that. And then coming here and, you know, before I got into performing, there were bands I would follow, and I really was able to enjoy Seattle through its indie music scene, which was really rich and vibrant. There's some amazing venues. But in a way, I listen to more music when I watch movies because it, unfortunately, and Kate loves music so much, so I'll listen to what she's listening to.
Yeah.
But it really is almost kind of a special treat. And part of like what would happen is I'd be invited to perform at an arts festival that had bands on it. And so I would get to go and experience these really big bands sometimes, like the Yeah Yeah Yeahs or whatever, from the from backstage. And that's the first time I'd hear some of these. And then I would go that way. And I haven't been part of a music festival for a second. So I'm giving you a very long
This is great. Okay, number five. What do you love to create?
You know, I've been thinking this about this a lot. Because I get to create a bunch of stuff, right?
Right.
You know, I make these paper bag puppets, which I think are really fun because it's like, because all they do is just open and close, right? But how do you create the limitations of that and turn it into something really interesting? You know, I love kind of finding a new way to kind of tell a story. And so, you know, but it's also like, that's also my job, you know? So writing jokes, getting something stage worthy, doing stories, doing all that. What is really satisfying, and I love that. And you know, and I was just thinking about what I was in the shower today. I was thinking about what I'm going to do on Emerald City Comic Con, and I'm actually pretty excited. Right. So, I'm torn between talking about sports from the view of somebody who doesn't know sports.
Okay.
Or because that is kind of the nerd, or I'm thinking about talking about my mom, who was kind of a secret nerd. And, you know, she had opinions on Godzilla, you know, and I realized as a Mormon housewife, she wasn't able to ever really come out as the true nerd, but she's the, so I don't know if I want to be goofy or sincere, right. And I'll figure that. Well, and that's great. But that's also kind of my work, you know, and they, you know, they say, if you find a way to do what you love for a living, then you should find something else to love because
but I mean, all the things you do, is there something you're trying to create?
Yeah, and I like that. I like creating a pocket of a weird shared universe. And you can do that with puppets or even the right weird post on social media or things. But I think something that I get a lot of satisfaction of, and I think is when I produce a show, creating a lineup of not just established professionals, but weirdos with potential. And a lot of times I'll give people the assignment that will then maybe wake up something and go that way. When I get to kind of, when I can kind of sit back and see that the show is successful, not just because what I've done, but the choices I've given, the chances I've given to folks. And then also too, maybe causing some ripples in a scene that I can find very, very boring.
Yeah.
You know, I want there to be more weird PowerPoint stuff. I want there to be more character-based comedy. I want all of that to happen. And I can't do all of that stuff myself. But if I can seed that strange garden and sometimes see it be successful.
I've joked for years about the meme show that I want to do a show. It's just, it's a meme. Memes. It's just memes.
I think, and actually I think you could there's some great people that could do that now. Yeah. And I think that there's some fun stuff. But the last Joke Tellers Union, I had Miss Ruby Ross, who is Seattle's best puppet drag queen. So it was a guy with the puppet that he has a beautiful singing voice, it's kind of cabaret stuff, but he wasn't in drag. The puppet was.
The puppet, so, okay, that's why I was like, who's in drag? Is it
wearing black and just kind of just, but he had, but those puppet and puppets did some kind of like cabaret level jokes and then sang a beautiful voice and serenaded the audience. And it was the most polarizing thing of the night.
Right? Yeah.
People either loved it or not, but I realized that I had created an experience that no one else had, that some people had never experienced before. And so I think that's also why we like talking about movies and showing people movies, you know, because there is creating stuff, but there's also that aspect of curation or advocacy that can make.
Curation is creating, I think. Curating is creating an experience.
And so I would say, I don't know. At the end of the day, all of this stuff I do is just kind of creating a fun world for, even if it's just temporary. Sugar Plum Gary really does that, you know, bringing people into the fun world of Nightmare Christmas. But and having that, but in a way that spills over into people's day to day life, you know.
Yeah,
I like that. Like asbestos, you know, it hooks in the lungs.
As a real estate agent, I appreciate that, Joe. Number six, what's a game you love to play?
What sort of game?
That's open to your interpretation.
Oh, it
can be video, could be board game, but like if I said go play it,
so Dungeons and Dragons saved my life in the 90s. You know, and we in Utah had the Satanic Panic stuck around longer than a lot of places, which is weird because Mormons now love D&D. They just love it. I have a friend who their family is currently doing a Dungeons and Dragons campaign that is the Book of Mormon, but that they have homebrewed.
Okay.
You know, that was not the case. We had to sneak out of the house and tell our parents, you know, we had a friendly basement, but we told most people that we were playing Risk, which how boring did they think we were, that we were, you know, hanging out in that basement for 6 hours playing Risk. Also, that's only half a game of Risk. but Dungeons and Dragons, I think, taught me a lot. As a kid with a stutter who was shy and, you know, had some things, you know, it's reading, it's verbal communication, it's math, it's world building. It's all of that stuff that later I think I wouldn't be the entertainer that I am or the creator that I am without Dungeons and Dragons. Now, I've only over the last 20 years done a smattering of games. Part of it is everyone wants me to be the dungeon master. Have felt weird because if I'm going to tax my imagination to create something so elaborate, that's how I pay my bills. And so a lot of times it felt really like playing hooky and stuff. But I have given myself permission to this year. I actually did a Kickstarter. I backed the Kickstarter for a OSR that's old school Renaissance. Kind of like an interpretation on old school Dungeons and Dragons, making it more accessible.
Okay.
Called Knaves Second Edition. This is real nerdy stuff.
Okay.
A guy named Ben Milton, who's a commentator on D&D, he came out with what he thought was one of the kind of this pure way to make a sandboxy game, a homebrew game, this toolkit he created. And the first edition of it raised $11,000, and he's like, that's great, I'll just do another one and it will be cool. This one, $800,000.
Oh geez.
Yes. And so something like 15,000 of it, more than that, like 30,000 of us backed this thing. And it's coming, and he's already sent me the PDFs and stuff, and I've been building kind of this campaign, and I'm giving myself permission to actually run this D&D style game. In fact, you're on my list of nerds to recruit.
Nice.
And the plan right now, this thing, is I'm building a campaign world, Eltaeus, which is this kind of gloomy port city that's isolated by octopus infested waters, that has a mermaid cult surrounded by a primeval forest. The city actually has a second city underneath it and a, you know, haunted goblin market and all of that.
You want to give that away already?
Oh yeah.
Because it's got to be a surprise when you're in the world, right?
No, well, no. I mean, it's all, it's, you know, no. I don't know if that, that campaign, that setting seems familiar to you at all.
No.
Okay, so gloomy port city.
Okay.
Surrounded by woods, by forests.
Well, yeah.
As a mermaid cult.
Oh, what am I blanking on? A mermaid cult?
Yes.
Is this a movie?
No.
A book?
No. Let's just think about the Starbucks logo for a second.
Oh, ah, okay. Okay, I gotcha. Oh, with a second, the city underneath. Yeah,
it's Seattle. It's Seattle. Yeah. It's the weirdness of Seattle.
I love it. Okay, I got it.
But also, I realized too, I've also been thinking, because one of my Stardew Valley, you know, the Twee farming game, yeah. You could make it into a pretty harsh D&D setting using this. So that's, but we'll see.
I love it. I love that.
What is the game I like most to play? Hopefully the one that I will start this year.
Okay. All right. Last question. Number 7.
Okay. We made it.
In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
It's weird because the thing that I probably have most record for right now with my, you know, I'm really bad at recording is probably my brief appearance on Last Comic Standing, right? Huh. That's the most documented, that's how I got in front of maybe the most people, right?
Yeah.
You know, 2 million people watched that episode I was on. But it's also the least interesting thing I've done. I think maybe, I think about this a lot, having gone through, like, what are people going to say at my funeral? What do I want my funeral to be like and all of that? And I've had to go through a lot of funerals recently, last couple of years. And what is the impact? You know, when my dad passed away, I realized that, you know, all 7 of us, his sons and one or another, we all had 7 different dads that turned into one thing, right?
Yeah.
We found stories, leaving some questions. Like, he was an honorary colonel of the Turkish Air Force. We found his golden eagle. And, you know, it's jury's out. Half of us think he worked for the CIA. Half of us don't. But I'm not going to say where I am on that. But, you know, in kind of those mysteries and questions and the stories that aren't. I think what I would be known as, you know, I've done a lot of really weird, neat things in Seattle and had some kind of, maybe some impact of the stuff I did. And the bizarreness that has happened in the rooms and stages I've created. Let's say that would be nice, you know, or, you know, maybe hopefully in 100 years from now, the people that are writing these histories are not people, but dogs. Hopefully dogs have. And so I do think that I would probably, I feel that they would speak very kindly of me. I am friends with a lot of cool dogs. And so, you know, hopefully I'll be known as one of the good ones.
The dog heirs of the world will
remember. Emmett, that guy, he always had pizza in his beard.
One of the good ones.
He was very kind to me.
And that was it. I don't have fancy endings to these episodes. Last question. Sometimes it just trails off, and sometimes here I am at the very end. So. That was it. Big thanks for Emmett for coming on the show. Check him out. Second and fourth Wednesday at the Clockout Lounge in Seattle. Until then, stay black and a half.